Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer. David Faber has the morning off. Dow's down three straight, longest streak since June, and a down day today would make it the longest since February. Futures are red, while jobless claims are back above 1 million. Our roadmap begins with concerns about the recovery as the Fed warns on virus risks. Earnings, NVIDIA, Alibaba, L Brands, Estee Lauder. There's a lot to watch this morning. And an Airbnb IPO is now officially in the works. So, Jim, we could go many directions here, but you were just talking with Becky about claims and this ongoing narrative that we've been focusing on, that is the split between public companies and smaller businesses.
Absolutely. I mean, when you keep thinking about what Target said yesterday, Brian Cornell with just a tour de force performance, many price target pumps today, talking about taking $5 billion in share. Well, you know he took it from somebody, and he's certainly not taking it from Amazon. I keep thinking about that number. Why? Because that's the $5 billion that probably would have gone into the smaller companies that don't trade or the companies that have had to file bankruptcy and are laying people off. I think we're starting to see layoffs after a period where we didn't. And I call to attention Estee Lauder, which is on tonight. They're laying off 2,000 people. When you have a tough economy, you don't expect that that perfume or that skincare gets hurt. I mean, historically, lipstick is supposed to be sold. You do better sales when things are weaker. We're not getting that. And so what I'm seeing is Carl, is a picture which just says we're ripe for stimulus, but nobody's talking.
Yeah, Jim, that's interesting. I mean, there's the Estee Lauder layoffs, American dropping 15 markets, which we'll talk about later on. The Journal's got a chart of companies writing down assets, the level of pre-tax impairment charges at the fastest pace since 2015, and it's only halfway through the year. But COVID cases are literally collapsing in a lot of those states that were troubled in the South. Shouldn't this be going the other direction?
Yes, it should be. But I think that one of the reasons why they're collapsing is because the governments have become very aggressive in a state-by-state way of making it so that a lot of the businesses that we used to like and enjoy, restaurants, bars, gyms, are being shut down or being curtailed. I mean, this new thing that's happened, Carl, it used to be that maybe you're going to have to take half the tables out. No, now the new rap that you're getting is you can only have 25% of the people that you used to have. Well, who knows what the hell that number is? I mean, you can only have five men in the men's room. Okay, you go tell the sixth dude he's out. I'm gonna spare myself that aggravation. We are right now beginning to realize that the pandemic has a recessionary impact that we hadn't thought about because, of course, 70% of the people who were getting that extra $400, $600, who are now hopefully get $400, probably won't, were making more money than they were at their job. So there's more spend, but that spend seems to be tapering off. And that's something that we're not ready for. And that's what the claims say. And that's what the companies are saying. And we better start recognizing that this market is going up. 25% of this of the S&P are just a handful of tech companies that are relatively immune. And then there's the banks. And then there's the companies that we don't trade. And they're looking wrong. The banks are a reflection, by the way, of the small business problems.
Yeah. So, Jim, does the claims number this morning build any urgency? You just heard Mark Warner talking about the possibility of a skinny deal this weekend. And secondly, do you believe that the sell-off yesterday was truly driven by some of the caveats that the Fed had in their minutes?
Look, I think the caveats made it so that people said, wait a second, the good news of what we heard from Target and Lowe's is not as important as the bad news is what we heard. Now, Lowe's didn't have any slowdown in August. They did a fantastic job, but people just kind of felt, well, maybe that's it. Maybe that's we're done. And maybe the Fed is worried that they're done. And those minutes wouldn't have looked like they were, even if we had a skinny deal. I don't know. When I reached out to Secretary Pelosi to come on the show, because I think that if you have Secretary Mnuchin, you should have Speaker Pelosi on. Speaker Pelosi was in California and unavailable. That's you know, people get unavailable. They got a convention to go to, but it just doesn't sound. How do you do a deal unless Speaker Pelosi comes back to work in Washington? She's working out there. I don't know. We need a deal. Both sides need a deal. I don't even know. I mean, some people are being too clever by half, thinking that no deal hurts the Democrats, no deal hurts the Republicans. I think sure. You and I are no deal hurts what we talk about, which is the economy.
Right. There is, though, Jim, the ongoing discussion about, OK, we spent $2 trillion. It bought us about 4 months' time. Now we're going to spend, I don't know, what, a trillion, maybe half a trillion. How many months does that get us? Two? A month? I mean, that's going to be the question going into the fall.
Absolutely. That's why I've said over and over again to both sides, look, you've got to make this so that it's open-ended. You got to make it so we have something that gets us to the vaccine. No one wants to relate directly why we have this problem. It's not because of a slowdown. It's because of COVID-19. So, you know, what are you going to do? You're just going to say, like, every 2 months, let's have something? No, let's make things contingent. Until we get a vaccine, we're going to continue to give extra money. Now, I absolutely understand that the budget deficit, and you can talk about the budget deficit forever. I'm talking about the society, because there's so many people, 15 million in the restaurant business alone. These people cannot have jobs, but they're not going to go become carpenters. Yes, lumber's up, and yes, we need more homes, but you're not going to take a waiter at Bar San Miguel and have that person work at Toll Brothers hammering nails. It doesn't work that way. We wish it did. We wish everybody was fungible. OK, and we're grateful that oil's at 42. So that part of the economy is not turning off. But we also listened to Phil LeBeau yesterday saying good news about Southwest. And then we get American today. And I'm thinking, wait a second, don't get too optimistic. And I think it's our nature to want to be optimistic. We like the fact that the market's going higher because our viewers own stocks. But right now we seem gassed. We seem gassed. And I think that when you get a number like that was this great, and I know we're going to talk about it, as NVIDIA, and it sells off anyway, that's much more a reflection of the stock market than it is the reflection of NVIDIA. Because that conference call last great night, which I had to read three times because Jensen Huang is so much smarter than I am. But wow. I mean, there was a point. I sent them a note last night. I said, guys, did you really say that the A100, which is their super, has 54 billion? Did you mean billion transistors or did you mean million? Billion. Is there someone who really needs that? And the answer is Amazon, Google, maybe Oracle, because they're in the mix, Azure. These guys are so far ahead of everybody else. But, you know, people just say, Jensen's such, I mean, I need a translator because, like, he speaks in 2040, 2050 language, and I'm stuck in this 2020 thing. And I do love him dearly, and I love the CFO, Colette Kress, but they're too smart. Remember the kids in class that you said, I don't want to be in that class. There's Jensen Huang. Well, that's Jen. You don't want to be in his class because he's going to ruin your curve. Right. Look at him.
There's the leather jacket, the trademark leather. Jim, you were absolutely right going into the print. You said expectations were elevated, even though gaming and data center were strong. I mean, B of A does go to 600 today from 520. So where are we in terms of evaluating the response to the print?
Well, let's see. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 price targets raised. 17? 17, most that I've seen. So I say that right now you put NVIDIA, you make it so that it's on your shopping list. When you think the selling is over, reach for that first, because that may be a new world record, 17 price target bumps. And everyone feels the same way. Yeah. They're like, gaming was so strong, but data center, I mean, these people are putting on numbers in the midst of a recession that frankly, if I were a CEO at any other company, I'd be calling a Zoom meeting right now saying, why can't we do numbers like Jensen Huang? Why can't we do numbers like him? And the answer is because he's smarter than you. Sometimes it's just firepower.
And then, of course, there's Intel, Jim, a $10 billion buyback resumption after suspending it in March. They say the stock is cheap. Yeah. FT with a figure today, Jim. We knew buybacks were going to be troubled this year, but down 46 in Q2, which is the lowest levels in about, 8 years. Are we beginning to see some renewed interest, at least from companies who feel they need it to resume buybacks.
I'm still getting the that it's reckless to buy comments when I speak offline to CEOs. I think it's curious. Intel announces the buyback. What was Intel's problem? They don't have this 7-nanometer, this smaller chip that AMD has. And this is kind of like Charlie the Tuna for those of us who are older. You know, we don't want tuna with good taste and buyback. We want tuna that tastes good, which is, of course, AMD. I would not buy Intel in this buyback. Let them buy back all the stock they want. Give me a 7-nanometer, and I'll buy your stock. I mean, that's what, again.
So you think, all right, so you.
I don't want it.
Yeah, you agree with the notion that the buyback is great, but manufacturing remains the focus.
This is not the Intel of old, and I am no longer an Intel-aholic because they're not giving me anything to drink. I mean, this thing is extraordinary. I used to go to their plants, and they were exactly the same way. A guy named Jerry Parker designed them all the same way. So he even knew where the closet was. If you went to the Irish one versus the one that would be in Silicon Valley versus the one that's in Israel. And now it's like, you know, they're just not – they're not who they were. The big ones that are great, it's NVIDIA, it's AMD, and it's Taiwan Semi. And then you got Lam Research, KLA-Tencor, Applied Materials. These are great companies. Micron, obviously, a little bit too commodity-oriented. I do think that ARM, which was mentioned on the call, but only provisionally on NVIDIA, is a great company. But no, I mean, I love Skyworks, but it goes into cell phones. And I love analog devices, but it's got too much auto. There are little flaws around the edges, but they have a lot of money. But they don't want to buy back stock. They want to grow. And I think that that's the difference between Intel and the rest of the group.
Yeah, Jim, it reminds me, you know, we're talking about a lot of names on the NDX, which, despite the new highs, has seen breadth deteriorate for several weeks now. And I wonder if you think that's concerning. Is it just a function of what COVID has brought to technology? Is there something larger at work?
I think it's very disconcerting. I mean, what you have, remember, the S&P is barely, you could argue it's not diversified anymore if five companies represent 25% of it. Those same five companies represent 50% of the QQQ. That is extraordinary. Now, every one of those companies, I think, deserves what they're doing. But how about the other guys? I mean, a lot of companies that are in that, that in general are in that index cater to small business. And the small business is dropping off rather quickly. It's a tough thing to watch because we all kind of know it. There's a place, I'm going to be a little anecdotal here for a second. There's a place called the Cupping Room, which was a place that I used to go to all the time in my halcyon days. And it closed. It just closed. These institutions. Institutions in each city are closing because they were not built to have 25% of their customers and still make money. And I think we all know this. We see places we love go, and we're not switching to Olive Garden, even though I happen to have a predilection for Olive Garden or Chili's, which is doing quite well. a Chipotle, you know, wings, a Domino's pizza with the pedestal. Yes. But, you know, Carl, we do not live by chain store restaurants alone.
Yep. You know that firsthand. But, Jim, that sort of brings us back to the bearish argument we got on UPS and FedEx 5 months ago, in that it was B2B, going to crater, look out below. And then look what happened. I mean, their business is so good, they're going to bring surcharges come a holiday season. But you're saying it's different when you can get things delivered at home. There's no substitute of these other B2B dynamics.
No, and I think that Brian Cornell undersold Shipt. That's Shipt, and how great that is. Bringing the stuff in an hour. Carol Tomei has been CEO of UPS, has been uncharacteristically quiet, but she's just learning the ropes. FedEx is one of the great turnarounds. People, that stock quietly has gone from 140 all the way up. And what I look, those companies are the new economy, and e-commerce is so powerful. And the thing that is, we got to stay focused on Square and on Etsy and on Shopify, because the part of the economy that is strong in small business are the ones that have transitioned and digitized to the web, and you get their stuff by the mail, by FedEx, and by UPS.
Yeah, Jim, there's, wow, the cross currents, really hard to read, especially going in to the latter part of Argus. When we come back, we'll talk more about that American announcement today, which markets are no longer going to have service, at least for a month, beginning in October, as they await further stimulus. Futures are weak, as we said. Dow shooting for 4 days down would be the longest since February. Back in a minute.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
American Airlines says it will suspend service to 15 markets beginning in October, at least for a month. Phil LeBeau has some of the cities. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Carl, we knew this announcement was coming. This is American formally saying, you know what? We have to plan to become a smaller airline because we're not sure if there's going to be another $25 billion allocated in another stimulus package for the airlines to guarantee jobs. So as a result, starting on October 7th, American will stop service to 15 cities. What types of cities were we talking about? These are smaller, mid-sized markets. Now, we're not going to run down all of them, but here are a few. Kalamazoo, Michigan, Springfield, Illinois, Joplin, Missouri, and then there are 12 other cities. And again, the idea from American at this point is if there's no extension, we will stop service to these cities and 12 others on October 7th, at least for a month, well into November. Then they'll reassess business at that point. As you take a look at the airline stocks pre-market, most of them under pressure this morning, keep in mind that they're is a discussion in Congress about whether or not to award another $25 billion. CARES Act 2, essentially, is what it comes down to. That would lock in the employees for all the way through the end of March. And approximately 75,000 layoffs would likely be avoided if this were to go through. Important to keep in mind here, guys, that part of this extension is not just guaranteeing those jobs, but also guaranteeing service. Because if there's no CARES Act, the airlines are then free to downsize their routes and their businesses.
Phil, I look at those cities and I think to myself, well, how many carriers really go to those cities? And if it's only going to be right. one now, it's going to, you know, go to Kalamazoo is going to cost as much as go to London. I mean, and the Congress people have to know this is going to occur.
Yeah, it is going to be limited. And what you have right now is most of these cities, they only have one airline. They might have two airlines flying in there. And the changes that are going to be made is the fact that you are looking at these cities and you're saying, are you going to have any service at all? Because you may not have any service. And that's what's going to get the people in Congress moving quickly. Nothing bothers them more, Jim, than when you say there's no air service to your district. Oof. You see how quickly they move. And that's why there's basically both Democrats and Republicans in support of another $25 billion. Don't forget, guys, later on this afternoon, you don't want to miss this interview. Ed Bastian, CEO of Delta Airlines, will be joining us on the closing bell. We'll talk to Ed about the state of the not only the airline business, but what's going on with another CARES Act extension. Don't be surprised if you see Delta, United, a number of the other airlines, as they lock in their October schedules. If there's no CARES Act extension, you'll see more cities losing service starting in October.
Wow. Phil, I'm looking. Airline Flyers got a tweet about the cities that would have no commercial flights come October. Joplin among them, Dubuque, yep. Stillwater, Oklahoma. No commercial service in 2020.
Whew. And Carl, I've heard from people who have said, oh, come on, how many people are flying to Springfield, Illinois? They can fly to St. Louis or they can fly to Chicago and they can drive down there. If you start taking it away from these smaller markets, you just can't ramp it back up and immediately say, well, OK, bring it back. I mean, it has a ripple effect that's going to be felt in not only those economies, but really in the whole airline infrastructure.
All right, Phil, we'll watch that. Look forward to hearing from Bastian. There's a lot going on the Delta side as well today. Phil, thanks very much.
Wow, Carl.
I don't know, Jim, where are you conceptually on airline aid? We keep coming back to this discussion of which industries deserve specific help.
Well, I think that we're getting now some bifurcation. I mean, Gary Kelly's saying, look, Southwest is doing okay, and they've cut it, down to $17 million a day burn. It still sounds like a hideous amount of money. It'd take you all day to go to a chimney and burn it. But I do think that this is a lead group. And yesterday when we saw the Polish Airlines buy a couple of Boeing planes, 737, got a little excited. We saw the Southwest news. And this just takes the air out of what is a key part of the economy. Don't forget, July next year, July 31st, is when Salesforce says its people can go back to work. What does that say? All those carriers need business travelers. Well, you know what? It's Zoom 1, American, United, Delta, Southwest, JetBlue, 0. And I think that you're looking at those companies are being zoomed faster than you can talk about. I can't wait to hear what Ed says, Ed Bastian. Of course, Phil always gets. I mean, most people have to understand that if you had these numbers, none of these people would come on. Somehow Phil gets people to come on. And it's because he's a great reporter. And they know not to dodge
so
a guy.
It's so true, Jim. It is curious to think about how the business model overall of airlines works when companies don't need to buy a last-minute ticket from New York to L.A. for $3,000, right? What happens then?
It works the same way that a restaurant does. Not so great. Don't you love when you go get, you know, I'd love to let people go into the restaurant. Of course, they're not allowed to. But I'd love to query them about their temperature and put a thing to their head. And I love, did you go to Florida recently? I mean, hey, do you know anybody? It's like going to a hospital, going to a restaurant. I mean, in the end, you know what? I'd rather have some cereal. Buy General Mills.
Jim, we'll get to a lot more today on a very busy Thursday. Talk more about what claims brought us. There's Estee Lauder we've not yet gotten to, BJ's and more. Future's still weak. Don't go away.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Let's get Kramer's Mad Dash for this Thursday, watching some L brands, Jim.
Yeah, they ought to call it Lazarus brands instead of L brands. This is the old Limited, and there is a groundswell of analysts saying you must buy this stock, including my fave in the game, which is Matthew Boss. Why? Because not only is Bath & Body Works back, and there the numbers really are quite spectacular, plus 13, but Matt says, you know what, even Victoria's Secret is making a comeback, which is rather incredible because, of course, these are mall-based stores. So this thing has had a big move, but all the analysts who follow it say it is not over yet. I don't trust it. Why? Because I don't like the mall. I'd rather be in a Target. But, you know, geez, like, you can't fight the program.
Yeah. Bath Body does sell hand sanitizer, Jim. I know
yes.
Some pointed to that. Victoria's down 39, but I think e-commerce sort of offset some of that, right?
Right, and the go-out is better. You know, July numbers were good, and we're looking for companies that where there is momentum, and this one has momentum. I know that a lot of people just say, are you kidding me? These are tired old brands, and they're in the mall. This is a shocker. There are a lot of people who in the teens thought that this thing could be a goner. It is clearly not a goner, and It's got momentum. Again, I'm not saying buy it, but the analysts sure are.
Yeah, you mentioned Estee Lauder earlier, laying off up to 2,000, closing 10 to 15% of their freestanding stores, Jim, speaking of the mall. You know, one analyst I saw this morning pointed out duty-free is essentially in hibernation, and that's a very high-margin business.
Yes, it's incredible.
For beauty, at least.
Exactly. Fabrizio Freitas will be on tonight and may have money. He's made a great business of duty-free, and it's also fantastic because you can tell where the travelers come from. There's a heavy, by the way, Brazilian contingent and South Korean contingent. Obviously, Brazil's really cut back. You know, Carl, one of the things is that people, they think that they've got skincare, which was strong, but they have fragrance. Fragrance was down. Hair care down. I mean, it was a suboptimal quarter. And Fabrizio Freitas is the best there is. He has done a remarkable job for the company. I certainly would not count him out. But also China's coming back nicely. But this is unexpected. And I would say unexpected because a lot of people just feel like if anybody has it under control, it's Fabrizio. But you know what? Some of these brands are expensive. Those who know these brands, La Mer and By Kilian, those were the standouts in their portfolio.
Yeah. Jim, let's get the opening bell here and the S&P 500 heat map. It's going to be relatively weak breath to start the morning, Jim. You mentioned China, and we now know that China Commerce Ministry confirming that those phase one progress talks will continue, at least on the phone. They're going to roll in Huawei and TikTok into that. Kudlow's on the tape right now saying that he's pleased with the progress of phase one so far, even making some comments here about Goodyear, saying they should change their policy on political attire to ensure freedom of speech. That was a big story yesterday.
Yeah.
But are you sensing any, I won't call it detente, Jim, but stabilization in what we were seeing versus vis-a-vis U.S.-China?
No. Every day a story will come out, it'll be a institutions should be ready to delist Chinese stocks. I wouldn't be surprised if they aren't working on something which says behind the scenes that we don't have to cooperate with President Xi, because why? President Xi's in trouble. That's a new narrative that came out this week. Now, I have no idea. I think it's so opaque. You don't know. You could never figure out where Stalin's lieutenants were and who was in trouble in the old Soviet Union. But that is the new thing. The new theme is, why do we have to deal with Xi? He may not be as strong as we think. And that makes it so that the president feels very much he has the upper hand. Look, again, we have no idea. This is not like the old days with Mao, where you had some people who were clearly going to be on the outs and then they were going to just go away. But this is something to keep track of, which is she in trouble? Now, that makes it so that that the president is less likely to want to do anything with China.
Yeah. Also, this reporting on U.S. intelligence now believing that officials in Wuhan and Hubei withheld the extent of COVID very early on from Beijing, which makes the whole picture much more complicated, Jim, to your point about whether she has truly long-lasting staying power.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, one of the great undercurrents is that there are people in the White House who say that whole delegation that came here on trade deal one, how many of them may have had COVID? How many of them knew about COVID? Now, COVID is a novel virus, and every time you really want to indict people for it, you got to remember that we still don't have any real handle on what, how to really take control of the thing, other than through masks and social distancing. But I think it's fair. I think there are very few Americans who believe that the Chinese were forthcoming. And that actually cuts in favor of the president versus the 172,000 died. I think a lot of presidents would be on the ropes because of that. But I think there's a lot of people who feel that the narrative that the Chinese were evildoers, like Ronald Reagan used to say about the Russians, is holding up. And remember, I think this is going this coming into a Cold War just like Russia and Reagan, not like Russia and Truman, by the way, but Russia and Reagan.
Right, right. Still, Jim, Alibaba did beat on the top and the bottom lines. Revenue up 34, cloud up 59. I assume there's no metric impressive enough to make you want to dip into those types of names.
Well, Baba is the only Chinese stock I'm recommending on Mad Money, and that's because when you read the financials, they read very much like U.S. financials. It's just basically a very, very smart, well-run company. Stock's down, but I don't know if it's just profit-taking. When I look at the 13 IPOs that have come this year from China, of which half of them are there's a lot of them that are down badly, but they're doing half as well as the U.S. ones. I come back and say, I don't know who buys these, but they're foolish or they're just playing some game, because it's always like, here's the Chinese. I'm waiting for the Chinese hydrogen car stock. I mean, the Chinese play games with our stock market like nobody believes. And people still are suckers, and they come in and they buy the stocks and they think they're going to go up. Alibaba, Baidu, JD, they have great businesses. And I totally understand why someone might want to buy them. But, you know, the Chinese reminds me of the Japanese in 1989. Where they had everything and their market, Tokyo, was bigger than New York. And just stay away. You had to stay away. I think you should stay away from the Chinese stocks. I think just stay away.
Right. Jim, Apple, of course, was a big story yesterday as we got the $2 trillion market cap even briefly. Today, Katie Huberty at Morgan Stanley reiterates overweight, 431 target on the used iPhone market, Jim, which she says has a long way to go before saturation. In her bull case, argues that you could see Apple with emerging market share similar to that in developing markets, which would have huge implications for things like services.
I would have felt better if she bumped the price target. She's too disciplined for that. But what was interesting was she goes, those who think that the used market isn't as big as you think Well, look out. Well, I don't know if Sol was even worried about the used market. It was a straw man that she developed to make a good case for Apple. But Tim Cook will make an even better case because, yes, the service revenue stream from everybody is just very, very big. Remember, you get that bill at like 3 a.m. You know, it hits me. I said, oh, I didn't know I spent that much for Apple Plus. I mean, it is a machine, and you pay for that machine without even knowing it. And I love that kind of business. How about a business where you buy something every day and you didn't know you bought it? What a business.
Now, that happens, although I don't know. I mean, how do you answer people who say, did we really build $1 trillion in value over 21 weeks?
Well, I think you'd say that, first of all, we know that there's no speeding tickets. This isn't I-95. It's not the Jersey Turnpike. What you tend to be able to say is the stock was undervalued to begin with. I did an interview with a fellow by the name of Rob Moore about Tesla. I said good things about Tesla and about how it's a $350 billion company and NVIDIA's $300 billion. They're both tech companies. You can understand why it might be worth $350. And there were people who just think that suddenly Jim Cramer has a brain. If I said it was worth $600, I'd be the man with two brains. But there is, without a doubt, an undercurrent that some big cap stocks are very undervalued, and then the rest of the money, rest of the market, forget about it. I tried to make a positive case last night for autos. Even the people who are in autos say that I look like I'm a little too bullish. So people want the same old over and over again. If NVIDIA turns up today, by the way, then you know that there's no stopping the $300 billion-plus tech companies. And it wouldn't shock me. I mean, I think people have been waiting to get NVIDIA for ages. Tesla, unbelievable.
Right. Well, at this point, I mean, if we're agreeing on the template, the choices are narrowing. Am I right? Or I mean,
yes.
That long-awaited rotation to value, Jim, even with, as we said, the collapse in new daily case count, it's making it hard to materialize.
Yeah. I mean, look, housing has done well. And one of the reasons I was talking to At Home yesterday to Mr. Bird, who's really terrific. This is a stock that was at one not that long ago. It's up 1,500%. Nice move. Obviously not a great move if you're going down. And he's talking about you need houses with offices. And that is the spur that people don't realize. They can't get, if they're in an apartment in the city, there's no room. There's no room for an office. So people are moving out, and that means there's going to be a long demand, long tail for housing. Because if you have a home office, it can't be in your bedroom. No one wants it there, especially because when you're working at home, it's 24/7. Hence, while we're hearing from CEOs offline, I'm hearing the following. I love this work from home because everyone is working 24/7. I can send an email to some guy at 6 a.m. He can't say he's in the shower. I can send a woman an email at 11. She can't say she's watching Netflix. They are working because they are working from home. And it's this whole new generation of miserable people. Horribly miserable people. I mean, the pandemic. Do you know anyone who's like happier in a pandemic? Hey, what a great pandemic. We got to have some more of these.
Yeah. Jim, I do want to get to Airbnb while we have time. Filing confidentially for an IPO, setting the stage for what would be one of the marquee IPOs of the year. It wasn't that long ago that Brian Chesky joined us and talked about the timing for a new issue. Here's what he said.
At this point, we're not ruling out going public this year, but we're not committing. We want the world to be ready for Airbnb, and that means that travel needs to see a little bit more of a sustained recovery. The market needs to recover a bit.
Well,
Jim, in July, they said customers booked 1 million nights for the first time since March, so we have seen a rebound, at least in the rental.
Brian has a heart. I remember when he had to make those layoffs most recently, it was grieving to him. But one of the things that I get is this TREP, T-R-E-P-P, historical CMBS report, actually, let's just call it English, update on hotel commercial real estate. And they're saying that the percentage of loans that are 30 days or more delinquent is now 23.4%. That's the highest percentage on record. So Airbnb may be doing well, so then people might say, well, people are traveling again. These hotel numbers are staggeringly horrible. So people are staying at Airbnb. Maybe it's cheaper than a hotel. That you can't have this many delinquent loans and expect the banks can rally. There's just too much money at stake. So Airbnb good, hotels not good.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that issue, of course, later on. In the meantime, Jim, we are getting some news that Steve Bannon has been arrested and indicted by the Manhattan U.S. Attorney, federal prosecutors in Manhattan. For more on that, we'll get to our Eamon Javers. Hey, Eamon.
Yeah, Carl, this news just coming out from the Southern District of New York saying that Steve Bannon and three other men have been arrested and indicted and charged in relation to their role in a nonprofit organization called We Build the Wall. It's a crowdfunding organization that the SDNY says has raised about $25 million for wall-related funding. What the indictment here is alleging is that Bannon and these others were skimming some of the proceeds from that fundraising for themselves, even though they had suggested publicly that this was a volunteer organization and they were not taking salaries. The indictment document here says that Bannon publicly stated, "We are a volunteer organization." Those representations, the government says, were false. They also say that Steve Bannon, through a nonprofit organization under his control, Nonprofit One, as it's referred to here in the document, received over $1 million from We Build the Wall, at least some of which, they say, Bannon used to cover hundreds of thousands of dollars in his own personal expenses. So, Carl, dramatic development here for a former high-ranking White House counselor. We'll see if the White House has any statement on this coming up this morning. Back over to you.
Wow. Carl, you can still donate. Your donations have a direct impact right now. You can go to the site. Maybe it's ill-advised to give the money right over now.
Yeah, I'm looking over the DOJ release right now, guys. As alleged, the defendants defrauded hundreds of thousands of donors, capitalizing on their interest in funding a border wall to raise millions of dollars under the false pretense that all of that money would be spent on construction.
Wow. How about innocent until proven guilty?
We will see. Obviously, the timing of it, Jim, given the, I mean, Biden's going to literally accept the nomination tonight, but it's from DOJ. So we'll have to see whether or not they give more clarity on it and the degree to which the White House will respond.
It's shocking. We've all come to know Mr. Bannon coming on CNBC. And this is some, look, we can't even speculate. This is, wow. I got to read the indictment. I mean, that's serious stuff, obviously.
Yeah. So we got the markets down, obviously. Dow down for a fourth day in a row. Oil is weak. Let's get to Bob Pisani, see what's moving inside. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, Carl. Happy Thursday, everybody. Week open, 4-1 declining to advancing stocks. And it really started yesterday around 2 o'clock Eastern when the Fed minutes came out. Very odd, because the Fed minutes, normally not a market-moving event, but it was yesterday. I think the concern here is, and we've lost 30, 35 points since that Fed minutes came out yesterday. I think the tone around the reopening story for the Fed is a lot more pessimistic than the market's own narrative. And I think that's part of the problem. Jobless claims may have added to that a little bit today. But if you look at the sectors, broad swath of sectors are fairly weak. Even the semiconductors, NVIDIA had a great report. So maybe some concerns about data centers, but they're down about 1%. Most of the other ones, except Intel, are down today. Banks and energy, industrials, a fairly wide swath to the downside. Only real estate peeking its head out into positive territory. The rallies this month we've seen in the travel and leisure stuff that we saw earlier starting to fade the last few days. So we've seen some weakness in the major names here, Carnival, United, Hyatt, Avis, of course, keeping an eye on all those names starting to fade. Speaking of travel and leisure, I know Jim mentioned the Airbnb thing, but I think this is very interesting that the last valuation, this is a confidential filing, so we don't have any numbers of what they're floating here, but $18 billion is the April round of funding, and the prior one, prior to that, was $31 billion. People said, my heavens, this is 40% lower. But that's not a big surprise here. 40%, 50%, that's what all these travel and leisure stocks have been declining from their recent highs. So if you look at just all the names, Royal Caribbean, any one of these hosts, Southwest Air, all the airlines, all the hotels, they're all 40, 50, 60% off of their recent highs, most of which were hit in February and March of this year, or January and February of this year. So not a lot of surprise here about the lower valuation. You'll notice all that talk about what was going on with a direct listing, all that went away. I think they do need the money at this point. I think it's interesting. I know Jim mentioned the Intel's program, but the $10 billion buyback program, it's interesting because we just haven't seen many of these buyback programs at all here. Now, obviously, Bob Swan says that the company is trading below its intrinsic valuation. That's fairly obvious statement for the company to make. They've been notably underperforming since their July earnings and guidance report at the end of July, notably underperforming the whole semiconductor group overall. But I think the important thing is just take a look at what's been going on here with the share count reductions. There's been half the amount of share buybacks this year than announced last year, about $90 billion in the second quarter. That's half what it was last year. And what we're seeing now is the share counts are no longer reducing. The buybacks are not reducing the share counts in the S&P anymore. Remember, share buybacks reduce the share counts if they're aggressive enough, and that makes the earnings look better. This has been a big feature for the S&P for years now. For the last 4 years, 2016, 17, 18, 19, the share counts have been going down on the S&P, and that's made the earnings look better. This year, it's not happening, and it's not happening because the buybacks are not as big as they used to be, and companies are actually issuing more shares to have the liquidity. So all of this, I'm bringing this up because Intel's a little bit of an anomaly with their announcement today, and they're trading on the upside, one of the few semiconductors that are. So let's keep an eye on whether buybacks make any kind of comeback later in the year. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks. It's been a busy morning of eco data. Rick Santelli brought us claims in Philly Fed. We'll get LEI in a bit. Hey, Rick.
Yes, and, you know, most of the data was somewhat in the right zip code. We could debate, you know, definitely initial jobless claims reversed a bit, but that really shouldn't be shocking. And let's consider many of the dynamics in place for the economy, as you'll see by the following charts, didn't seem to pay a whole lot of attention, actually. Look at a 1 week of 10-year. Now, we could debate as to what the motivation is, but exactly 1 week ago, we were a little bit above 72 basis points, and every session since has been lower yields, higher price. This is the fifth session in a row, as you see, and it isn't only here. And this is what's always interesting. There's so many different dynamics between what's going on here, China, Japan, Europe, whether it's the COVID, the economy, and the currency moves. But yet, look at the 30-year boon, which, by the way, had the best demand in an auction the other day, even though it was a small size compared to U.S. auctions, about $1.5 billion of 30-year boons. Well, it's also has its fifth session in a row where yields are moving down. But what's notable is last Thursday, it was in positive territory at plus 03. It's minus 09 today. You can see how that chart has looked very similar to the chart here. Now, when you talk about COVID and how it's affecting the economy and the dislocations between the economy and the markets, one chart really jumps out at me, and it's a very important chart. This is copper versus Dow Jones Industrial Average year to date. We all know copper's got this special quality. I used to call it the sentinel commodity. It kind of shows you the way, especially from an industrial perspective. But there's no doubt that that chart, they're cross-fertilizing each other. So you can say what you want about the dynamics of the economy or a couple of bumps in the road on initial claims, but that chart is pretty clear. Finally, foreign exchange markets. Listen, we all understand different dynamics, as I pointed out, when interest rates move together for various economies that have different dynamics. But in Europe, especially of late, their currency, the notion of shared debt, the notion Christine Lagarde has corralled the cats, things may be, you know, more stimulative. Well, look at the euro. It's getting crushed today. Maybe it's taking a breather. Many think it's this COVID uptick that we're seeing. Read some stories about France and Germany. But nonetheless, it is a rampant spike, and maybe it's needed because it's had a good run. And look at what it's done to the dollar index. Dollar index is flying up right now. Carl and Jim, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see you in a few minutes, Rick Santelli. So we got markets red here. Just about all sectors are in the red. Tech is eking out some small gains, and we got the VIX up to 24. Back in a moment. In a sign of the times, Taco Bell continuing to expand their digital footprint, launching a new Go Mobile concept for their restaurants today. The strategy includes a reduced dine-in footprint while expanding drive-through lanes and encouraging customers to order ahead on an app. Jim, sort of rings similar to this upgrade of Shaq today over at Wedbush, where they're saying COVID is helping fast food in just the same kind of ways it's helping tech.
Same thing with Chipotle, which has got 100 of these drive-thrus, the Chipotle lanes. They make a lot of money with them, taking it up to 1,000. I think Taco Bell's being very opportunistic there. By the way, remember that Starbucks is going to do same small format stores. This all has to do with the ability of a large company with a big balance sheet to be able to say, you know what, we're not going to do big stores anymore. We're going to do little stores because we can't have a lot of tables anyway. But what does the independent restaurateur have to do? They can't do this. And that's why the big keep getting bigger. And Yum is a buy. I think Yum is, it's not doing as well as Chipotle. But these places can pivot. And the large companies, they can go anti-COVID, they can pivot, they can do curbside. I mean, they're calling them bellhops. People can bring it out to you. You can't get that kind of help at a smaller outfit because everybody's either behind the bar, or they're in the kitchen, a waiter. Nobody in the independent has the ability to have bellhops. So look for this. This is a very positive sign. And a lot of people feel that they had been missing the boat. Yeah. So this is a nice response. Yeah. Now they just got to taste better at Pizza Hut.
The commitment you have to make, Jim, to change your footprint like that is not going to be undone by a vaccine. I mean, those drive-through lanes are there to stay, which means this trend's going to be with us even post-COVID.
Yeah, a lot of these real estate investment trusts, they can't say no to these guys because at least they pay. And they can kick other guys out, but they need is Chipotle's. Chipotle's are getting some great deals from the real estate investment trusts.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Kimco later on this morning.
Oh, fantastic.
Take a quick break here. As the NASDAQ is showing a little bit of life, up 16 points. Dow's down 76. It's time for Jim and Stop Trading.
Sometimes when a company gets two different pushes ahead of a quarter, it's a good sign. Palo Alto Networks, PANW, Nikesh Arora, so smart. Two different firms say, you know what, it's time. And I've got to tell you, this one, while it's just a few points from its high, can go higher because this is one of those work-at-home security and also firewall on-prem security. Nikesh has been able to pivot to handle both. He has been a wizard. I think the stock goes higher. PANW.
All right. Wow, interesting, Jim. So tonight, EL, and I guess EL you'll watch some of the – it's hard.
EL is canceled.
I'm sorry. Tonight – no EL tonight.
Yeah, no EL tonight. Disappointed, but what can you do?
That's how TV works, man.
Yes, it is. I need Phil LeBeau. Give me Phil. He'll get American Airlines. We have Akamai, and we've got Ping, which is work-at-home security. I mean, they also do some other stuff. But I may talk about a wondrous dog tonight, a dog that can hunt better than any dog in the world. You know the name of my dog, and it's NVIDIA.
It is indeed, Jim. Has been for a long time. Yeah.
Well, since 110.
Yeah.
I did rename my dog Everest NVIDIA because NVIDIA needed more love and gets all the love from the stock market.
Some of the luckiest pets in the world, Jim.
Yeah.
We'll see you tonight.
Thank you.
Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time, of course.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.